Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Upside, the real deal for saving money and getting a big gift card for every business trip you buy. Visit Upside.com and enter the code NSS and you're guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details.
Hands-on with the OnePlus 5, getting the best from Wi-Fi, and how to unfollow everyone on Twitter. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Athens, Ohio, and hello, everybody. Welcome to the new Screensavers. I'm Leo Laporte.
And I am Florence Ion.
Yay! Nice to see you.
Nice to be back. Happy summer, officially.
Yeah, well.
A couple days in.
I'm dressed like an festive old guy from Palm Beach, so I think this is summertime.
I love your shirt.
Thank you. I also, I want to thank Father Robert and Nathan Olivares-Giles and Scott Wilkinson for filling in the last 2 weeks while I've been gone. But I'm back, baby. Sorry. Episode 110 for June 24th. Yeah, 2017.
Officially,
the first show of summer. 2 years.
Yeah,
very good. You're
years.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. You got the OnePlus 5. I can't wait to see what you think of that. That everybody's been waiting for this phone. How much is it?
$479, right under $500.
And you, it's sitting right next to your $1,000 Galaxy S8. So
sure.
We'll find out. Yeah, we'll find out which is your favorite. I've got a Alcantara. That's the name I call my new Surface laptop. I'm not going to. We talked a little bit about it last week. I think Nathan opened it before I got back, which was fine. I told him he could do that. I think we kind of got the idea on this thing. I'll show it to you a little bit, but mostly I'm interested in the new operating system that Microsoft's shipping with this, and many others are shipping with their low-cost laptops, the Windows 10S, supposedly more secure. What do you give up? What do you get? Is it worth it? We'll talk about that in just a second. Jim Salter's back from the Wirecutter. He gave us a great review of mesh routers. He's going to talk a little bit more about routers, testing routers, and just routers in general. They've got a new setup at the Wirecutter, and we're going to find out more about that. Answer some of your questions, too, from the mailbag and some calls for help. But first, the topics of the week, the big news stories. Have you ever been neighbor spoofed?
No. What is that?
You have been neighbor spoofed.
Maybe I have.
You just don't know it. I think everybody watching has been neighbor spoofed. That's when you get a call, mostly on your cell phone, and the caller ID is from your area code, sometimes even from your exchange. So, you know, from the first three digits of your phone number. You ever get a call like that?
I get a lot of 415-609 numbers,
yeah,
which is a very popular cell phone number sequence,
yeah,
in the Bay Area.
But when you answer them, it's mm-hmm. There's a dead moment, and then it goes, "Hi, I'm calling from Marriott Hotels, and I'd like..." Click.
Hi, let me adjust my headset. 1 second.
Click.
Hi.
They're robocalls. It turns out, first of all, it's illegal to caller ID spoof, and particularly caller ID spoof an ID that looks like a number near
mm-hmm.
you. Because, and for good reason, it's very annoying. The reason they do it is because you're more likely to answer it. Well, it's somebody nearby, right? It's a friend. It's probably my kids or whatever. I don't know this phone number, but
school.
I'm school. Yeah, that's when I often say, oh, maybe it's school calling. I don't fall for it anymore. I just don't answer the phone ever again. But there is one guy, a Miami fella, who apparently, allegedly, according to the FCC, made the bulk of these calls. He's been doing it for years. The FCC pulled his call records in December. He had made more than 96 million robocalls in just 3 months. That's a million calls a day all of them using neighbors spoofing, all of them not from a neighbor, but trying to sell you a timeshare. And the way he got caught is he pretended to be, the caller pretended to be from well-known travel sites. TripAdvisor was one of them. They got word of this. They did an personal investigation. Then they notified the FCC. And the FCC has requested, I don't know what the difference is between fining somebody and requesting a fine, but they proposed a fine of a very big fine of $120 million for this guy who made millions of these calls, more than a million a day, according to the FCC. Can you believe that? Now, I hope there's more than a $120 million fine. I hope that they take this guy and they put him away or they somehow shut down the operation. But I don't know about you, but I haven't noticed any diminution of these neighbor spoof calls.
No, I have to block. I have to actively block things with Google Dialer, which I really appreciate that Nuga has that ability in the Dialer app.
It's gotten so bad that I know that T-Mobile, AT&T, and I think Verizon are all now starting to tell you, oh, this is probably spam. Right?
Yeah. It's unfortunate, though, because a lot of times, like you said, the numbers will match somebody else's phone number in my contact list.
This came up for me the other day. Somebody called me and said, "Did you just call me?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, I got a call from your phone number." I said, "Are you in the 707 area code?" And I gave him my exchange. I'm going to give you the all. Well, I'll tell you. What are you going to do? Call all 10,000 numbers. 707-971, is that, are you in that exchange? He said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, you got spoofed. That's spam."
Sorry, buddy. You got spoofed.
Because I didn't call you. I know I didn't call you.
Yeah.
But that's bad. So don't call people back if you get a phone call from that number because it's just some spammer in Miami.
I'm having a bad day and I need to yell at somebody.
By the way, the guy who's getting fined is dressed exactly like this, I believe. Yeah. This is my Miami outfit. Okay. What do you think about Uber now?
You're a
woman.
What do I think about Uber?
The reason I ask you because you're a woman.
It's hard.
Do you still use Uber?
Well, now I just kind of drive.
Oh, you have a car.
I just deal with it and drive.
You don't actually take a cab or anything else.
No, and now I've just resorted to, you know what, it'd be healthier for me if I walk places.
Walking
in San Francisco
is good. You live in the city.
Instead of spending $12 to go three blocks, because that's lazy flow.
So you may remember a blog post just from a few months ago, Susan Fowler.
I was reading her Twitter feed just this morning.
Wow. She wrote a scathing blog post. She was an engineer at Uber, treated, well, abysmally, let's face
Absolutely.
It. But worse than that when she reported it to supervisors, it was shined on. She was discouraged. Yeah. She said, oh, no. They would say things like, oh, no, this guy's a really good manager. This is the first time it ever happened. And then she'd find out it's the 80th time it happened. There was a real culture of sexual harassment, bro culture. And the board apparently is blaming the founder because Travis Kalanick resigned his position as CEO of Uber this week. And he was forced to do so. Great reporting, by the way, by Mike Isaac of the New York Times. He was forced to do so by the board. In fact, it's the skullduggery. Did you read, like, the calls and all of the stuff that went on? It happened on Tuesday this
week. Yeah. Well, I guess you could see it as an escape from all the other bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
You
know, it's funny because for a while it was like every week another scandal at Uber, right?
It was
just endless.
But it's I hate to say this, but I mean it's kind of good in a way because it's bringing awareness to these things and it's creating a snowball effect where more and more people are talking about it online. It's creating dialogue.
More women in other Silicon Valley companies are coming forward
Absolutely.
To say, hey, it's happening here too.
They feel safe. They feel a little more brave. And it's hard to do it all on your own.
Yeah, and I'm very, very sympathetic. Of course, the question is, who are they going to replace Kalanick with? And already we saw a petition from Uber employees, 1,000 Uber employees, saying, bring back Kalanick. He has to run this company. He founded it. He's the only guy who understands it. We need him back. The board says you can't do business in this climate. You've got to reinvent. You've got to redirect the company. And presumably they're going to nominate somebody, and people have been talking about a number of candidates, but somebody who could do that, possibly even a woman.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about Sheryl Sandberg, the COO at Facebook.
Yeah, I had read that rumor as well.
Don't know why she would leave Facebook, but maybe a lot of money and a chance to run a company, restructure a company. They've been talking about Susan Wojcicki. She's the CEO
That's true,
at YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
They also mentioned some men's names. Alan Mulally, who is a friend and a former CEO at Ford, and a really great operator. He retired from Ford, ran the...
Oh, automobiles. That is actually a great...
Yeah, because of autonomous vehicles.
Absolutely.
We'll see. I think that, I don't think Kalanick's coming back, at least not for some time. He is... The question is he gone? He's still chairman of the board.
I mean, was Bill Gates ever gone from Microsoft?
He doesn't have day-to-day operational power
but
anymore.
He's still tied to it forever. And
perpetuity. If you have a company created on this kind of bro culture, how easy is it to fix that?
It's not. I mean, you have to burn it all down and start over. I mean, maybe it's a little extreme, but that's...
But do you want to burn Uber down? I mean, this is a super unicorn.
Well, I think of... I actually think of the retail clothing company American Apparel.
Another example.
Yeah, because they had a lot of bad things happening with their CEO and their founder, and then they got rid of him, and the company now is owned by Canadians.
And how are they doing?
Well, they've had to...
They're not American anymore.
No, they got rid of everything. All the stores are 70% off. It's finished.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, where you go from here with all this bad press?
Big opportunity for Lyft. Does Lyft take off?
So... Funny thing about that, just a little anecdote. I was hanging with my friend from L.A., and she said that in L.A., a lot more people now are taking Uber because more people started taking Lyft, and now Uber is offering the cheaper prices. And when you're in L.A. and you're taking an Uber, you're going a lot farther than we are in the Bay Area. So I can imagine that's why it's sort of, like, picked up again down there.
I was at a store yesterday. I think this is the weirdest thing. And a guy was there. He said, well, can somebody call Uber for me?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, no, you don't... You can't call Uber.
It's not a taxi.
You have to have it on your phone. He says, well, no, I have it on my phone. I just don't have my phone with me. Can I use your phone to call Uber? I said, no,
Hello, Uber?
You have to have your phone. He said, well, no, I do it all the time. I'll call them and leave my phone home and get in the car. I guess you could do that once you set the destination. You can't tip the driver or I mean, I guess you give him cash. But I said, no, you can't have my... I'm not going to... Get your own Uber. Get your own Uber. I still am using Uber because it's just the easiest, the fastest.
It is.
And I said, well, why don't you call a cab? This is why I brought this up. I said to the guy, well, call a cab. That's what people did before they had smartphones and Ubers.
Back in 2012.
But a cab would be so expensive. And that's the secret to Uber and to some degree Lyft's success. They're cheap in most cases. I just saw a statistic the other day that... When you take an Uber, you're only paying for the cost of 41% of the cost of that ride. That Uber is subsidizing your ride to 59%.
Slice.
That's how they can make a lot of revenue but lose so much money.
And contractors. Lots and lots of contractors who don't need benefits.
Right.
Or
I hate those. Those benefits. So I don't know if I believe this, but Google says it's not going to scan our email anymore to target ads.
Cool, I guess.
What?
How will I know what to buy on the internet? How will I know where to buy clothing
things? Are people excited? Okay, so I have a number of reactions to this. One is, oh, yes, sure. How will we know they're not doing that? Right.
That's fair.
But you would know because if you mention, you can even test it. You mention something in your email and you get an ad and you didn't mention it anywhere else. That would, by the way, get ready because we're going to see a lot of those stories, right? I talked about dying in my email and I got casket ads and I never mentioned it anywhere else.
Never too early to start.
Right. I don't mind. See, I don't mind. I would rather get ads that are based on stuff I'm talking about and interested in. Wouldn't you rather have an ad for something you're interested in than something that you're not interested in?
Yeah, give me the makeup ads. Give me the clothing ads. I don't want the other stuff.
But here's the real analysis. The truth is Google doesn't need to read your email anymore. They know plenty about
you. Oh, they got everything on us already.
They already know everything. And it wasn't working out that well, the email thing. So they're really spinning this like, oh, see, we're not going to. You know what? You wanted privacy. We're not going to read your email anymore. That's not what's going on. They just finally realized that we don't need to read their email. We're not learning anything anymore.
And now when you use Google Assistant, it'll just learn everything about you from there.
I want you have Bixby, the actual talking, walking Bixby on your phone. I want to find out more about that. That's coming up in just a little bit. Also, your review of the OnePlus 5, Father Robert Ballester will come out. He took a vow of silence, and he came out of his vow of silence to review the OnePlus 5.
For this phone.
That's how excited he is. I am not joking. This guy's going to hell for this phone review. Or maybe not. I don't know what the rules are. We've got the wand. We got the Amazon One. Megan will have a review of that. All that's coming up in just a little bit, plus lots of your questions. But first, a word about business travel. Have you ever worked, Florence, for a company that's big enough to have a travel department?
Like, yeah.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah,
you're going on business and you go, can you book me a flight? And they book a flight and they do the whole thing.
Oh, it was so nice.
And then you get in a company like ours or a smaller company and you do it yourself. And this is an opportunity. So a good entrepreneur, Jay Walker, the guy who started Priceline, saw this and said, I can do better. For companies that don't have a travel department, don't have pre-negotiated deals on hotels and air, Upside.com. And you're going to love it. There's an upside to Upside. It's well named. Because every time you book travel with Upside, your company saves because they've got those great pre-negotiated rates. And you get a gift card. A gift card you can spend at one of 50 different merchants, including Amazon and Target. It is awesome. Go to Upside.com. It's an easy way to book business travel because they don't give you a lot of options. They've got the – what you'll see is as soon as you enter in where you're going, you're going to do a hotel and air. You know the air. You know the schedule. You know the airline. You know the hotel. There's no mystery. It's not like Priceline in that sense. There's no mystery at all. But you're going to see six of the best deals right up front, pre-negotiated prices. You want more, they'll give you more. But they simplify it. They make it very easy to get that business trip booked fast. And then at the end of it, go ahead, let's put one in. We're flying from SFO. Let's go to New York and see a Broadway show. To JFK. How about that one? So you pick your airline, your airport. Let's go next week. Next week. Fourth of June. Yeah, there you go. That was a good one.
Better
whatever.
Prices.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's see. And let's go first class because Florence is a.
We're splurging. We're going to go see Hamilton.
It is for work. Let's say work. Okay, now let's go ahead.
Yes.
Okay. Now they're going, and there you go. Now, notice they're going to show you what the published price is, but just let's pick one. There's a nice JetBlue flight. That was actually great. Nonstop. Love JetBlue. Go ahead, select that. Now we're going to find a hotel. And we're going to see how much we save at the end, by the way. And we're going to see how much we get in a gift card. And that's even the best part. Actually, I love the Hotel Pennsylvania. That's a fun one. All right. Select that one just for purposes of this demonstration. All right. Bundling your flight and hotel with Upside, you're going to save $45. And I get a $51.
Yeah.
Now, that gift card can go right in your pocket. Upside.com. It's the real deal. You get great value gift cards with big companies. You get reputable hotels. You get really good flights with big name airlines. Plus, if you use our promo code right now, NSS, you're not going to get a $50 gift card. You're going to guarantee to get at least a $100 minimum gift card when you book your first trip. And in fact, if you're traveling overseas, it could be even more. Save big on travel. Receive a big gift card every trip. Find out what your next trip is worth today. Upside.com. And don't forget promo code NSS. To get a minimum $100 gift card, there is a minimum purchase required. See the site for complete details. Upside.com. It was what was the company you worked for, the travel?
IDG.
IDG.
Yeah.
Ziff Davis.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
You just call them up. They say, you're no problem.
My it's girl like Wendy. Miss ya.
Yeah, I miss mine, too. I don't remember her name, though. Boy, you really do. So you do miss it. The new OnePlus 5. OnePlus is a great story. It was started by, and I'm not sure, is it owned by Oppo or are they just big investors?
I believe they are big investors.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird. Oppo, which continues to make the best Blu-ray players and great stereo equipment, decided they wanted to do phones. They spun out a division called OnePlus. See, get it?
O-P-P-O.
O-P.
Fingerprints on it.
And the OnePlus One, they got a little heat for their weird marketing on the OnePlus One and the invitation system and all that. But I have to say, the OnePlus One was a great phone, great battery life, and a great value. They've improved it again and again. And now here's the OnePlus 5, brand new. Now, somehow, Father Robert, is that your screensaver? What is that? That's pretty.
That is the wallpaper. That is the stock wall or
the stock.
Default wallpaper that comes with it. And look at these pretty icons, and look at this mess of a screen I made last night.
Well, I'll tell you what, Father Robert Ballester, who cares so much about this, as you may know, he has taken a vow of silence as part of his, he's a priest, he's a Jesuit priest, he's part of the deal somehow, and they do the thing called the tertianship, and he can't speak for 3 months, except he got the OnePlus 5, and here's his email. He says, my superior allowed me out of silence and gave me back my laptop, so I could edit this review and upload it. With some bandwidth, I'm piggybacking off of an adjoining office. That's okay. That's a venial sin. That's okay. You just mentioned it at confession this Sunday. I'll be giving back my laptop tomorrow, today at noon. So if you need any changes, get them to me now with the email header before silence. That's how he'll know, because he's not allowed to read email. Once I'm back in silence, I'm not going to be back till August. But we will look forward to getting Father Robert back. And this, my friends, his last review of the OnePlus 5.
This is the 5. The new phone from OnePlus, the scrappy manufacturer of low-price, high-functionality phones that offer flagship features at about half the price of the more popular flagship phones. The 5 features a 5.5-inch 1080p AMOLED display under Gorilla Glass 5, run by an Adreno 540 GPU. Processing power is provided by an 8-core Snapdragon 835, supported by 6 or 8 gigabytes of LPDDR4X system memory, and 64 or 128 gigabytes of storage, running UFS 2.1. Internally, the 5 supports 34 network bands and a dual SIM tray, making it a true world phone, as well as Bluetooth 5.0, NFC, GPS, GLONASS, Baidu, and dual-band 802.11 ABGNAC with 2x2 MIMO. The 5 is constructed from anodized aluminum and measures 152.7 millimeters by 74.5 millimeters by 7.25 millimeters thick and weighs 152 grams. It has all the fineries you've come to expect on a high-end phone. Fingerprint, accelerometer, gyroscope, proximity, ambient light, magnetic, capacitive touch hardware keys, 3 mics with noise cancellation, and a physical switch for sound profiles, USB-C connector, and a 3.5mm combo audio jack. Thanks to the 8-core Qualcomm processor and the GPU, the OnePlus is fantastically responsive. Graphics are smooth, fingerprint recognition is immediate, and apps load quickly thanks to the dual-channel NAND flash. With an AMOLED screen and 3 user-selectable color profiles, you'll also find the 5 has both a usable outdoor screen and spot-on color reproduction, perfect for the shutterbug who wants their final image to look like what they see on screen. Even with a significant increase in GPU and CPU power, the OnePlus claims 20% more battery life for the 5 over the 3T. And my real-world use suggests that estimate might be conservative. Of course, battery life is subjective, and you can drain the 5 in less than a day, but I was able to use my review unit for 2 days and still have enough power for days of light usage. If that's not good enough for you, the 5 also supports 20-watt dash charging, which can bring your 3300 mAh battery from 0 to 90% in about an hour. All of this starts at $479. Of course, we've been here before. OnePlus made its bones by offering high-end features for a budget phone price, and the ergonomic design, responsive OS, and full feature set still has us wondering if OnePlus fixed the one glaring flaw in their previous phones, the camera. So this time around, OnePlus partnered with high-end camera experts DxO to give us something better. The question is, did they succeed? It's promising on paper. There are 3 cameras on the 5, a front-facing fixed-focus 16-megapixel Sony IMX371 with EIS, a rear-facing wide-angle 16-megapixel Sony IMX398 with EIS, and a rear-facing telephoto 20-megapixel Sony IMX350. More important than the sensors is what they've done with them. They improve the glass and the focusing software. The main camera captures 34% more light, and the autofocus locks in 40% more quickly, avoiding the soft focus and constant refocusing of the 3T. DxO provided some of their image magic to clear up the noise in images by comparing multiple shots and removing artifacts and inconsistencies. And Pro Mode, along with the ability to shoot in RAW, gives expert users control over every aspect of their shot, from ISO to white balance, focus, and exposure, all with an on-screen histogram to guide the user. For video, the front-facing camera can shoot 720p and 1080p at 30 frames per second, while the rear camera can do 720p 30, 1080p 30 and 60, 4K at 30, and slow motion 720p at 120 frames per second. Shooting side-by-side with the OnePlus 3T, the 5 was a whole new experience, from the much-improved UI to the sharper images and more stabilized video. The thing about playing with the OnePlus 5 is that you never feel tempted to justify its capabilities by pointing out that it costs one-half to two-thirds of a high-end mobile, because it is a high-end mobile. In fact, OnePlus has been in the rarefied air of upper-tier phones since the 3. The addition of an incredibly competent camera makes the 5 not just the economical choice, but the smart choice for Android lovers who don't want to pay a premium for a brand. For the complete review of the OnePlus 5, watch KnowHow at twit.tv/KH. I'm Father Robert Ballasher, the digital Jesuit, for Twit TV.
Thank you, Robert, for coming out of silence and doing that. We really appreciate it. And one of the things Robert's great at is getting all the specs laid out. So now we know about this phone. And I have to say, I agree with him. The OnePlus 1 was a battery life hero. Now, Flo, you've had this not for about as long as Robert has, about 5 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, when I picked it up, I felt pretty good. But what do you think? How do you feel
about
this?
Would you like to hold it?
Yeah, I would, actually. It feels really nice. You have a soft touch black, matte black back.
And that's because this is the 8 gigabyte version, which you can get for an extra $60.
Which might be worth it because it's not only 8 gigabytes of RAM. I don't know if anybody needs that compared
to
6.
No, you don't.
6 seems plenty. But you do get 128 gig storage.
Yes, you do.
Right?
So you'll get double the storage, and it has no expansion slot, so that's something you might want to consider.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that while there is a 3300 milliamp battery inside, it's only powering a 1080p screen.
Ah, and that's how the OnePlus 1 saved,
which is fine,
This is high def.
You don't need 2K, peeps.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But the other sort of caveat is that although the photo samples that Padre was showing off were pretty nice, this thing doesn't have optical image stabilization.
Yeah, EIS,
yeah,
not
it's, which
optical.
I'm just not. I like having the physical ability to sort of zoom in and capture the photo,
Well, and more than that, in low light, it's going to perform a lot better if you have optical.
Absolutely.
And this does not.
It's a little finicky
now,
in lower light situations.
What is it doing with the two lenses? That's interesting. Is it like the Apple iPhone where it just uses one as a zoom? And one is a
yeah. One. If you'd like maybe a deeper depth of field, you'd use the 20 megapixel. Father Robert said it is a bigger lens focal point, so it's a 40 millimeter versus the 24 millimeter that's on the primary 16 megapixel.
It's kind of like a zoom.
Yeah, that's the one that does the portrait mode exclusively.
Right.
Which is exactly what it sounds like. It's like the iPhone 7's portrait mode, and I haven't had much success with it yet, but to be fair, it's because I was shooting mostly in low light, so we'll see how we do in sunlight.
So it didn't sound like you were crazy about the cameras, though.
I mean, I've been using a Galaxy S8 and a Pixel XL for a very long time.
Those are excellent. Those are the top of the line.
I can't go any lower than that.
Yeah. And these are not as good as the Pixel or the
S8. No, but it's also a fraction of the price.
Right.
A major
about,
fraction
of the price.
It's about
half the price, yeah.
Yeah, at $480.
The other thing I like that those other two don't have is this physical silence button.
Oh, it's
I always
so great.
Thought that was a great feature of the OnePlus.
You just reminded me I needed to turn that on to do not disturb, actually.
Yeah. It's upside down from my... I would think that down would be off and up would be on. It's the other way around. But nevertheless, it's nice to have a physical on-off switch, especially if you forget to silence your phone and you're in court or you're in a business meeting and you go, oh, let me silence that. And it's silent.
Absolutely.
Which is nice.
Also,
it feels good. If it's got a high-end processor, the 835.
That's
it's
right.
It's got more RAM than any phone on the market.
Six gigs off the bat.
You don't get any benefit from eight, right? I mean, who uses 8 gigs?
I mean, if you're crazy into hacking and maybe power.
I'm not convinced 6 is better than 4, but this must feel very smooth. It doesn't slow down. Yeah.
The UI is so smooth. I mean, even compared, I'm sorry, to the Pixel XL, it's a very nice smooth feel, very light as you can sense it. Fingerprint sensor, very fast, even though it's on the front.
It's front, which I'm not crazy about. I really do like how the Pixel has the rear fingerprint sensor.
Absolutely.
But a lot of people are used to front. Samsung puts it on the front. Is it a physical? No, it's a physical, it's a moving button.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a home button, and then there's capacitive buttons, which I will say I was getting very annoyed with.
Really?
Because I kept bumping them while playing, games on screen with the on-screen controls.
Yeah.
So my thumb kept bumping them.
So you
them.
Like the way the S8 does it?
I actually prefer the Pixel, but that's because I am of the old school belief that bezels are there for a reason. They're a buffer for those of us who use the bumpers at the bowling alley.
Well, this is not a bezel-free phone.
No.
It has bezels top and bottom, although not much on the side. So overall, you got to include price when you review this phone because it is such a low price.
$479.
I mean, that is a great deal.
But no water resistance, by the way.
So you're going to give up water resistance.
Yes.
You're going to give up a great camera.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's capable.
It's not bad, though.
It's not bad.
But you're not as good.
It's not the best.
Screen resolution is lower. It's not. Is it OLED or is it IPS? I can't tell from looking
at it. I don't want to misspeak on this. I believe it's IPS.
I think it's IPS, yeah. And that's probably one way that they can keep the battery life so high. I got to say, the battery life is a big seller for me. How's that experience been for you? Pretty good?
Well, I've heard mixed. It's been fine for me, but I'm also maybe not as heavy as a phone user as other people.
Yeah. What Robert showed was remarkable. He was getting a 4-day battery.
I mean, again, lower resolution screen, bigger battery than what you normally get on a flagship. Most things come at 3,000 milliamps, so.
Would you recommend this phone? Somebody who's price sensitive and can give up
on
those?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's flagship specs for a non-flagship price.
Now, a couple of things you should be aware of. You saw the article in XDA Developers. They said, once again, OnePlus has done this before, they are tuning performance. When they see a benchmark, they effectively cheat by improving performance just for that benchmark. That's why XDA Developers says, we are not going to give you numbers, performance numbers, because we don't think those results are fair. They're misleading.
Can we show the graphs? I believe there's some graphs on this page. Perhaps if I work, there we go. So that red is the one with. We showed this in All About Android earlier this week, and that red is the one where it's cheating, and that is compared to what the benchmarks are supposed to be.
See, if you left the CPU frequency that high all the time, you'd have no battery life, it would overheat. But you can do it just for Geekbench to say, well, let's get the best result. So don't pay any attention to Geekbench numbers. Having said that, I don't know why they do this. It's a perfectly fast phone.
Yes, and they everybody's got this processor if you're...
Yeah, 835 is an 835.
Everybody's got it.
All right. OnePlus, just knock that off, okay? Otherwise, though, pretty impressive phone.
Yes.
Especially if you're in the market for a phone. Maybe you want to wait because you know the new Pixel is going to come out later this year. Or maybe you want a Note 8 and that'll be out later this year.
Or maybe you're on Verizon or Sprint because you actually can't use this phone if you're on Verizon and Sprint, even though it does have the compatible bands.
It's GSM only.
Well, it's not GSM only because apparently it works overseas on the CDMA networks, but they didn't do testing or certification here in the U.S. for Sprint and Verizon.
Oh, so they just can't turn it on. So it's AT&T, T-Mobile, Google Fi,
or any other pay-as-you-go service.
All right. I'm excited about it, but I'm not trading in my Google Pixel XL. No.
Well, also Samsung because you'll Galaxy get the best S8. Updates on that one.
Oh, that's another question the chat room wanted to know. What is the update status on the OnePlus? Have they made a commitment to taking Google's security patches?
No.
They have not.
No. I mean, I believe we just got a security patch on the OnePlus 3 from a couple of months ago.
Oh, that's not good. I have to say, I just got on my S8. I just got the June patch. Not as fast as the Pixel.
Well,
but that's good. At least they're keeping up to date on the security patches.
I don't have it on my unlocked one, by the way.
Oh, that was
AT&T.
But
I do on the Verizon one.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
It's frustrating.
Yeah. So another reason to have a Pixel, especially with Android, I think it's important.
It's the hand of Google.
Those regular security updates. Hey, you did get something on your S8. I'm very jealous. You have Bixby.
Yeah, it was listening to us the entire time we were doing that segment, by the way.
So Bixby... This is the weirdest thing about the S8. They actually put a physical button on there for their own assistant, not Google Assistant. It's called Bixby. It, for now, all it does on my S8, you press the button, it'll pop up a Google Now type card screen. But yours, you installed the beta of the voice recognition?
I did, and I apologize. I was getting notifications on the camera. Yes,
I know. So, I always do, too.
I did sign up for the Bixby preview, the official preview
here
in the United States.
Does it do a good job? I want to see it.
Yeah, let me turn on the brightness so maybe you guys can actually see what's going on here. Let me turn up the brightness.
Yeah.
These AMOLED screens are hard for
cameras. They're so bright, yeah.
Hi, Bixby. Go to the gallery app. Oh, come on, Bixby. You're making me look bad. There you go.
I heard that.
Here's what I found on the web. Okay. So every time you
you can say hi, Bixby, to automatically activate it. You don't have to press that button.
Yeah, okay. And I recorded that beforehand. So hi, Bixby. Take me to the gallery app. Ay-yi-yi, lady,
supposedly,
you're not making yourself look good.
It's better at local things like that than it is at network.
It's not. This is not a replacement for Google Assistant. This will not help you on the web, at least as far as I have found. Let's push the button and do this. Take me to the gallery app. So I have to hold the button every time I talk, by the way, and I can't release it until I'm finished.
Okay,
so we're gonna let's crop this silly photo I took of Windows XP on this phone. Don't ask what I was doing last night. Crop this photo.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can give it in-app commands. Wow, look at that.
Crop 4x3. Yeah, this is such a... Okay. Bixby, we practiced this morning, and it worked flawlessly.
Demos never work on this show. I should just
I practice with you, and you make me look bad.
Now, is Bixby talking... You said
so.
I did call her
because I just fell into the gender trap.
So she has a female voice?
She does on here. Turn your voice on. I want you to hear her, and I think I accidentally muted her, and she did not know what I was asking, so that happened.
Turn the beat around.
Okay,
I want to hear the Bixby,
and actually we can listen to her if we go into the language and speaking style. So here you'll see that there's a couple of different languages. There's actually let's see if I can do this backwards. Korean and English.
Yeah.
And the reason Bixby was delayed is because I keep generalizing her. It was having problems with the English syntax. In Korean, though, in Korean, it's going to
Well, don't turn on Korean. Oh, that's it. We'll never be able to use this phone again.
It's a very beautiful voice that, unfortunately, is not working right now. So let's... Oh, there she is.
She's just very quiet.
Yeah. Okay. Let's...
Oh.
Yeah, so that was her in
that
Korean.
That sounded very natural. Didn't sound...
만나서 반가워요. 저는 빅스비예요.
That was him in Korean, and then in English.
Hi, my name is Bixby.
Yeah, not as good.
So the thing about Bixby that's very interesting, as an aside, is that every time you tell it a command to do on the Galaxy S8 or S8 Plus, it will ask you for feedback. Now, I don't know if this is because this is the beta version that I'm using, but it is very apologetic when it doesn't do something right. And when it doesn't understand you at all, it'll give you a list of options and say, what did I get wrong here?
Yeah.
And
so
then
you're participating in the training of this.
Essentially, and it's a very personified experience. I mean, I feel like I'm really interacting with.
So you don't mind helping out?
No, because I think I kind of see what Samsung's trying to do here now that I'm getting a chance to play with something that works. It really is just the assistant to control your phone. And the idea is that you could be halfway across the room and you can remember to share a photo and you'll ask Bixby to help you do that and share it to Facebook.
So it's almost a help assistant in the phone.
Absolutely.
As much as anything else. And that makes sense to me. Now, I couldn't understand why Samsung, given that you already have the best assistant built into the phone, Google Assistant, why would you want to add another voice assistant? Well, it's to help you with the phone.
It is. And I could see this really coming in handy in accessibility situations.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I actually think maybe that should be advertised a little bit more because that's just something that is not advertised often. But also, it's just kind of nice, the idea of interacting with this artificial person that lives in your phone.
Yeah.
It's very much the wave of the future is this is how we will be interacting with these devices.
Seems like it.
They're already in extensions of ourselves.
Right.
Might as well make them sentient, I guess.
Florence Ion has a number of articles about this on Android Central.
AndroidCentral.com.
And you can read more, everything you want to know about the Bixby
still
voice.
Still updating this article, by the way, because we're still learning. We're still getting to know you.
When is it going to go out of beta? Have they said? Or
no, not much information about that.
And is the beta open? Can anybody with an S8 install it?
I believe the sign-up period has...
Too late?
...been closed.
But I was out of the country.
You were out of the country. But maybe...
That's all right,
you know,
I really want
it. Can ask Grandpa Samsung.
No. Is that like Grandpa Munster? No, I'm fine actually with that. I'll let you use Bixby, and when it's done, you can tell me, and I'll install it.
All right, that sounds good.
We had, you may remember, Jim Salter on the show a few months ago to talk about the Wirecutter's review of mesh routers. We thought we'd have him back. He's working on a new router guide for the Wirecutter. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, Leo?
Great to see you. Welcome back.
Jim, I believe it was on the show last time we talked about routers.
Coinky dink or what?
You were.
That's great. Now, last time you were on, you were reviewing the big whatever it is, 8, 10 mesh routers. I know the Wirecutter.
Tons of them.
Yep, a lot of them. Currently picks the Orbi as the kind of the powerhouse, although best runner-up, I think, was Eero. And what was the third choice? I think there was a...
Plume,
which is what you were using at the time, and I end up using because of you. Eero, we should mention, is a sponsor. So what are you doing differently now?
I'm testing with multiple clients now, which is something that I've been working towards for a while. Instead of, you know, trying to do this thing where you're just hooking up a laptop and trying to get a big number and say, yay, big number, we're done. I'm modeling an entire network.
Yeah, because nobody, I mean, I look at my Plume setup and I've got 42 devices hooked up to those routers. Nobody uses just one client. Everybody has an increasingly massively complex setup. How do you do this? Do you have a test home or is this in your house?
I'm living in my test home, unfortunately. you know what they say? Everybody's got a test network. Some people are lucky enough to have a separate production environment. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah, I know. I have two internet connections, so I can try different routers. But it's not really a good environment because I feel like they're probably interacting with each other. So it's not the ideal setup. So what are you testing? You said before on the show that you're testing standalone Wi-Fi routers right now.
Yeah, right now, and it's a little odd because the multiple client testing stuff really lends itself to mesh, and different mesh devices are really going to, it's really going to showcase the difference between the mesh devices better. But the standalone router guide is what we're updating right now, so that's where the test method gets debuted.
I've got
four different laptops, scattered around the house. And they each are doing something like what you might be doing. One of them is simulating downloads. One of them is simulating web browsing where you're just clicking, going from page to page. Another one, a voice over IP phone call. And then finally, the last one is streaming 4K TV.
Holy cow. And I'm guessing that you noticed this impacts the routers in a much different way than just a single computer hooked up.
Oh, yeah, tremendously. I mean, I knew it was going to, but, you know, it's one thing to talk about it and say, oh, well, it's different when you've got these devices doing different things. It's another thing entirely to actually show it happening.
And that's the home of the future, too. Right?
It's the home of the present
for
me.
That's very true. Yes, yes.
Anybody who has kids, you know, they're guarantee you they're watching something different than mom and dad are watching.
Gotta watch Netflix in 4K.
Right. And I have a network-attached storage device. It's probably always down. In fact, I was really... amazed when I first started using these mesh routers. Some of them will give you usage information. Plume's just added that to their app to see how much bandwidth these devices are
using. Who is staying on their computer all
night? It's crazy. I was surprised that I had exceeded Comcast's terabyte a month bandwidth.
Oh.
Now I'm not surprised. I'm surprised I don't exceed it all the time. I mean, that's normal, you know?
Jim, I have a question for you. Have you...
Sure.
Heard anything about what Samsung's coming out with their mesh router wiring system thingamabob?
Because they bought smart
I actually
things,
had
right?
not.
Yeah.
That is a completely new one on me.
Oh. Okay.
Get ready. You got more to test.
Well, I wanted your opinion.
You got more testing to do.
It's not out yet, but I believe it's coming out. Yeah, they have the Kinect Home. They're doing their own mesh Wi-Fi.
Yeah, because they bought smart things, so they've
and
got that
built
hub.
In. Yeah.
And it makes sense. You know, I think that's what everybody, Apple and Google and everybody else probably eventually you're going to do is some sort of using, as long as you've got this hub, using it as a smart home hub.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. That's
well, I'm
coming
curious
up next
about
month.
It because, I mean, mesh routing seems to be like the cool new thing in this day and age.
Well,
and
that's a good question. So you're testing standalone routers. When should you use a standalone router? When should you use a mesh system?
At this point, honestly, unless you live in a small apartment, you really should be using some kind of mesh, whether it's Wi-Fi mesh or whether you've got you know, several wired backhaul access points like Ubiquiti or Ingenious's stuff. We probably really need to be moving beyond this idea of I have my Wi-Fi router singular and that's it.
Why is that? What are the real problem areas?
So the big problem is that, you know, the more of these devices that you have, the more likely that lots of them are talking to the router from all over the house. And when you've only got one single access point, you can have a lot of problems above and beyond the simple. You think like, oh, well, it's further away, so I have less signal, or there's walls in between, so I have less signal. There are more problems than that. RF multipath in particular is going to be a worse problem the more distance and the more walls and the more devices that you've got going at all. And it sounds very technical, ooh, RF multipath, but basically it's the same thing as just an echo, but it's for radio instead of your voice.
If you drive like downtown listening to FM radio, you know what multipath sounds like because the signal's bouncing off of high rises and it sounds terrible. Well, bad sound is going to translate to data loss if you're on a Wi-Fi router.
Absolutely. So, you know, even the mesh systems that aren't actually splitting the access points up onto multiple bands, which ticks me off because they should be because that works better. Even without that, you still get some benefit out of it because your devices are closer and they get a better connection and they use up less airtime for the same amount of bandwidth.
So pretty much you're saying if you're in a studio apartment, you can use a single router. In fact, it'd be crazy to use a mesh. Where are you going to put the other ones? But anyone else, if you've got more than a few rooms, you want to spread the Wi-Fi out with these mesh router systems. Last time I read the Wirecutter, you were very high on the TP-Link Archer C7 router, mostly because it was a very good router for a very low price. I know you can't tell us the results yet because you're still in testing. But do you think, do you see any up-and-comers? Let's ask that question.
You know, I've always been really fond of Netgear stuff in the consumer space, and I can tell you that it's been doing very well in these rounds of testing that I've been doing so far. If you want to, we can look at some of the graphics from that a little bit later and kind of go through what makes the difference.
So you still have the C7 in there, I see.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, I kind of have to because we've been recommending that really strongly. It's been our recommendation bar none, so at the very least, we should be looking at it, right?
Right.
And this first slide that we're looking at, it's what I like to call easy mode testing, which means that each one of these routers I've manually set up separate SSIDs, you know, network names, and I've joined the various devices carefully to what I feel like is the best SSID for that name to, you know, split it up and kind of load balance things manually. And so all these routers, you know, they do reasonably well with that. The C7 actually does less well than most of them. It's only dual band, and that C5400 is a tri-band router. So there's more channels to split the workload up from, so it did better. But again, this is really a little bit misleading because who really sits there and carefully only connects their devices to just the right SSID for that point in time in relation to what everybody's doing? Nobody. So the next slide really is a little more accurate, I think.
Let's see.
When we
that.
Do the hard mode testing.
Whoa, and you can see those reds are not good, right?
Wow.
Yeah, those reds are absolutely terrible. We went from, you know, a mediocre pass on the C7 and you know, the easy mode where I carefully tested everything. I carefully split everything up. What we're looking at in this slide, the hard mode, is where there's only one network name. And you can join either the 2.4 gigahertz or the 5 gigahertz radio, but it's all one name and you don't think about which one your device is connecting to. Well, the Archer products don't do any load balancing. So if you only set up one single network name, all of your devices are going to hop right onto the 5 gigahertz and you don't get to share any of the workload with the other radio. And as you can see, that results in an absolutely terrible experience when all four of these devices are trying to do their thing at once.
Wow, look at that.
Wow.
Now you can see the C5400 did a little bit better. It's got three radios in it, and all devices still ended up on one single 5 gigahertz radio, but it did a little bit better. I'm not entirely sure why.
Isn't that funny? That's one of the things mesh routers do well, right, is they split you up among different radios.
Yeah, exactly, the load balancing. And that brings us to the Linksys device. That's the first one in this slide that actually does offer load balancing, but it's not very bright. It doesn't use the 2.4 gigahertz radio at all. This is another tri-band router. It's got two 5 gig radios. And it only load balances between the two of those. And it's not actually load balancing. The documentation says that it picks, and I quote, the strongest signal for any given device. But I mean, both radios are in the same tiny little plastic box.
Right.
So other than, you know, some weird artifact of, again, RF multipath, you're not going to see any difference. And in fact, that's, you know, I say that's hard mode, you know, like I just let it do its own thing. But for the Linksys, sort of yes, sort of no. All four devices hopped onto the same 5 gigahertz radio, and I actually sat there and just disconnected and reconnected one like five times before I managed to get it to just randomly finally decide to switch to the other one. Now, if you go back to the slide we were just looking at again, and you look down at the bottom on that Netgear R8000, that's also a tri-band device, but the Netgear does smart band steering. It knows that it should be load balancing. It's not doing some silly thing like, oh, you know, what's the strongest signal? And it did use all three radios for my four devices, and as you can see, it did a much better job.
Wow. Yeah, noticeably. Wow. So that just shows you it's not necessarily how much power. It's not necessarily how many antennas on the outside. There seems to be a horrific trend among manufacturers now to add more antennas for no apparent reason. It really
Netgear is really bad about that.
I know. I have an Asus that looks like an upside-down spider. I don't understand what they're thinking. But it's the intelligence in the router, and this is something fairly new, that they're putting this kind of intelligence into a router.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's good news, and I look forward to seeing your review. That'll be how soon on thewirecutter.com?
I would guess probably about mid-July. Yeah. I'll be done with testing next week, but there's a pretty lengthy editorial process that goes into putting those things together, so I can't really give like an exact publish date, unfortunately. I'd love to.
If a router, one of these routers, for instance, costs nearly as much as mesh, that's one of the disadvantages of mesh is, of course, these tend to be very expensive. Would it be worth getting a single router, or is a mesh always a better solution? By the way, the Plume I'm using because you told me to, so I'm just...
Call the red.
happy. I might have to go back to my Orbi, except I gave it to Megan. Now, what's this R8000? Is that a mesh? That must be one of the newer mesh.
No, that's the same one from the last slide.
So it outperformed the mesh routers.
It did in this case, and the reason for that is... So the Orbi there, you'll notice, didn't do quite as well.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because even though the Orbi is also a tri-band product, one band is reserved for the Wi-Fi backhaul.
Right.
So effectively, there's only two bands to split the workload up from.
Right.
Plume did not do as well as it could have with that test. Sometimes the cloud optimizer just does not do the best job of setting up the topology, and unfortunately, this was one of those cases.
Does it get better over time, or is this what I'm going to be stuck with?
If it's not doing well, you can call support, and they can kind of kick it and make it do something different. There's not much that you can do directly to jigger the cloud optimizer around. It kind of does what it wants to do. And sometimes, most of the time, it does a really good job. But sometimes it does like what you saw there, and it just reuses the same band too many times. And if it does that... Now, to be fair, you know, if you were comparing that to those standalone routers, it's still looking pretty good. But, yeah, compared to the tri-band, it's not doing well then.
There's
Another thing to note, though, this was a fairly small environment. These tests were only taking place on the top floor of my house.
Right.
If we included downstairs, none of those standalone routers would have... they would have failed entirely.
So that's when you start saying the extra expense for a mesh router is worth it. If you have a complex environment, either spread out or you've got multiple floors, it makes a big difference to have a mesh
system.
It
does. And, you know, keep in mind, even these tests, I mean, I've got a whopping four devices hooked
up. That's nothing. I told you, I have 40-plus devices. Yeah.
Exactly. I can't model everything with what I've got here. So there are some other advantages to mesh that we're not seeing, but I think where it's going to get really interesting is when we really start hammering all the mesh devices with this setup and, you know, seeing what the differences are between them.
You can see now why there's so much kind of anecdotal and opinionated. You go to Reddit and you read about this. Everybody has a different opinion. It's RF is very complicated and very tricky, and it's hard to say there's a right answer and there's a wrong answer that is a definitive correct answer. And so there are a lot of opinions, and none of them are all wrong. Yeah. I don't know if any of them are all right either. This is a tough thing, and this is unfortunately one of the things everybody is facing, how to get better Wi-Fi. I don't know.
Plenty of those opinions are all wrong.
Okay, there are some really bad ones. I agree. Yeah, I read them all the time.
You know, one of the big things is that some of the most technical people that are trying to give answers on this stuff, they're not using Wi-Fi the way that the less technical people are, so they're not very good at advising them.
Right. I was going to ask Jim, did you? Sorry to interrupt, but I was going to ask, did you get a chance at test like a lot of different maybe smartphones on this network. So sort of
sounds like all laptops.
Yeah, it's not, I imagine like a household just full of, because my problems, my pain points have always been when I have people come over to my house and they go, Flo, your Wi-Fi's slow.
Yeah.
And I thought you were the techie. And then I got a mesh network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you really want to have fun, throw some Apple stuff in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing that I see over and over and over is, you know, people complaining that literally only certain Apple devices aren't working with their Wi-Fi and everything else works
very
great.
Very common. Yeah.
Pretty frustrating.
For a while, iPads were banned on one college network because they would bring the whole network down because of how they worked.
Never mind all the pirating of movies. iPads are not allowed at the dorms.
I think they fixed that problem, just to be fair to Apple. They've definitely fixed that problem.
But yeah, in general, you know, you're more technical people. They're not using, they're not actually using Wi-Fi much. It's just the throwaway thing for the phones.
Right.
And it works fine because they don't have, but you know, one or two phone doing anything. And it's usually not doing anything that big.
Yeah.
But then you get into a consumer house and they want to do everything. It looks a lot more like this model network that I've set up where you've got, you know, streaming and browsing and downloading and, you know, VoIP calling and everything all going on. And it's all supposed to coexist. And, you know, they're not going to go through and like connect one device to one network and a different one to a different one to get like the max big number. So you really have to test it the way people are going to use it, which is just connect it all up and hope for the best.
And then there are other issues that you can't test. Things like Netgear's had problems with firmware security in the past. One of the things the mesh router manufacturers do seem better at is firmware updates. They seem to be working harder to keep their stuff up to date.
I would agree with that completely. Yeah. I mean, the big reason that I got away from normal routers and did the build my own thing was just not being willing to deal with updates happening whenever they happen and usually manual and you have to know about it and go find it and download and install it.
Not consumer friendly.
Mesh is really
no.
Mesh is a lot more consumer friendly.
Oh, absolutely. You just hook it in and it works.
Everything but the price.
Maybe.
But we're all suffering the Wi-Fi blues. And Jim, I thank you for doing the research you're doing to help us cut through it. And that's one of the things that Wirecutter is so good at. Thewirecutter.com. I read it religiously and recommend it all the time.
It's how we make all of our purchases in our home.
Yeah, it pretty much is, yeah.
You know, I would like to mention the price thing, though. It's not that bad. If you're going from a cheap router to mesh, it's a big jump. You're going from, you know, like $90 to, you know, $300, $350. But those tri-band routers we were looking at, most of those are in the $200 to $250 price range. So you really have
That's
to ask yourself at that point, you know, is it that big a deal to spend the extra $100 for the mesh?
Do it. Please.
It's probably
There's
not.
The spider.
Yeah. That's the spider. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it.
I
highly recommend it. I've gone mesh and I'll never go back. Although I have to say one of the problems with Plume, and I think there's going to be a problem with the new Eero beacons, you plug them into the wall, you can't really pick where they are. I actually took an extension cord and hung my Plume up here so that it would have better the router, the main Plume, so it'd have better access to all the other the things we do. I mean, it's almost down to putting tin foil on them and holding. And
you gotta do what you gotta do, Leo. It's okay.
The router's not working. Thank you, Jim. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Leo.
Take care. Jim Salter, thewirecutter.com. We're gonna do a call for help in a little bit. But there's a new product that came out when I was overseas, and I just kind of went a little bit crazy over this. This is the Amazon Wand. It's got Echo built in. And, of course, Megan Maroney just had to have one. Here's her review.
Where's my Diet Coke? Order me Diet Coke.
The top search result for Diet Coke is 20 pack of Diet Coke 12-ounce cans. It's $7.99. Should I add it to your Amazon Fresh cart?
Yes, please. The Amazon Wand is here. This tiny wand will help you scan everything in your refrigerator and reorder the things you order most often. To set it up, you just hold down the button until it turns orange. You have to hold it down for 30 seconds, which is kind of a long time. It's powered by two AAA batteries that come in the box. All right, let's scan some stuff. It doesn't speak when you're scanning, so you have no idea if it works or not. All right, let's see in the Amazon app if it got everything that I scanned. Big Tree Farms coconut nectar. I'll save that for later. Dr. Prager's Sensible Food Veggie Burgers Kale. Not ready for checkout. Let's see. Here you can check the prices, too. For example, do you really want to spend $77 for veggie burgers? Here's the Air Hogs Star Wars speeder. So it looks like it has several choices. It also lets you order by your voice. Order paper towels.
I found Brawny Pick-A-Size paper towels. It's $30.99 plus tax. Would you like to buy it?
No. Order a giant monkey.
The top search result for giant monkey is Gun Mambo Monkey Stuffed Animal. It's $14.09 plus tax. Would you like to buy it?
No. You can also ask the wand things that you can ask your Amazon Echo or your Echo Dot. What's the weather?
Currently, in San Jose, it's 85 degrees with clear skies and sun.
Play my flash briefing.
Flash briefing is not supported on this device.
As you can see, it's kind of hit or miss as to what skills it can and can't do. You just kind of have to try things. I think they're adding new things all the time. The Amazon wand costs $20, but here's the thing. If you buy one right now, they will send you a $20 gift card. That means it's free. If you buy now, you will also get 3 months free of Amazon Fresh. That's a subscription service. It normally costs $14.99 a month. So if you think you're going to be ordering groceries from Amazon, this is a pretty good deal for now. I'm Megan Maroney. I host iOS Today every Monday with Leo Laporte and Tech News Today every Monday through Friday with Jason Howell at 4 p.m. Pacific right here on the Twit Network. And one more pro tip on this. You cannot yet, even though Amazon has bought Whole Foods, you can't walk into a Whole Foods yet and wave your wand around and shove a bunch of things in your cart and walk out without paying. Don't do that. Believe me. I know. I tried.
So
can I cancel this? I want to cancel it right now. This looks dopey. All right. Because I thought it would at least say, you know, Nature Valley nut bars. What did it say?
I'm going to try Bixby over here because I'm curious.
This is Anthony Nielsen, so Anthony has to look at his Alexa. Did I just order Nature Trail Mix for you? What does Bixby think?
It did.
It knew it. That was correct.
And oh!
It's doing a good job.
Bixby worked, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And actually, if you have, I should point out, a phone with the Amazon shopping app, it also will scan and do the same thing. So I'm not sure if you really need this. It's not very expensive, but also the voice isn't very loud.
I do like the idea of, though, that you can ask it the things you can ask Alexa.
Right.
And that you just cart that around with you around the house.
You think you just have
so
this
when you're
in your
home
hand
alone.
At all times? I solved it the other way by putting Amazon Echoes in every single room, so I don't need to do that.
No, you just walk around and Alexa, take a dictation.
Note to self. I'm sorry, I just added notes to your shopping list. Oh, well. Okay, there you have it. That's it. That's the wand.
It's cute.
It's interesting how Amazon is coming out with all sorts of Echo form factors now. They had the look and the home, and now
how to put Amazon in your home.
Everywhere.
Always in your home.
Everywhere. It's time for a call for help. Ed is on the line. He's calling from Ontario, Stony Creek, Ontario, Canada.
Hi, Ed.
Hey,
hello.
Ed. Nice to see you.
How are you, Leo? How are you, Florence?
I'm good, thank you.
I am great.
Excellent.
So ask us your question, Ed.
Well, I just got my fancy new LG G5.
Ooh, nice.
But one thing it's missing is like an app tray.
They're gone everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah, like everything's in folders and stuff. And
yeah.
I've never used a third-party launcher, and I know you've mentioned them before on the show. And so I kind of wondered, like, how hard is it to set up? How hard is it to if you change your mind, how hard is it to put it back to the way it was? I've never seen one actually put on a phone. I've been afraid to, actually, I'll be honest, because you get it set up the way you like, and then it'll probably move everything around.
It does. So you're using the Pixel launcher, right?
So I have a thing where I like to use the launcher that comes with the phone I'm using.
The Samsung.
So I'm using Samsung, and I am using Google, and I'm using OnePlus,
now,
et cetera.
I think Samsung left the app button on.
They did.
It, right? So that's that. It was in the middle of your dock. It was the circle with all the dots. You tap it and it would show you all the apps. And what Google did is they said, well, you know, you don't really need that. All we're going to do is we're going to give you the chance to swipe up. Problem is, it never works for me. You swipe up and then you'll see the app drawer just by swiping up. But I'm actually of the opinion the best thing to do. One of the things that makes Android phones so great is that you can get a different launcher. And it's as easy to install as it is to install any app. I'm going to show you the launcher I thought you used. You told me about
it. It's the one I suggest.
It's Action Launcher. Now, we have also used Nova Launcher,
yes.
And I know a lot of the people in All About
Very
Android
robust.
Think Nova Launcher's the bee's knees, and I think it is, too.
It can also be a little overwhelming at first, which is partly why I don't use it.
Action Launcher's even worse. But what you'll do is you'll go and you'll download. Both of these offer free versions as well as paid versions. Start with the free version. Download it. There are many other launchers like the Google Pixel Launcher. Download it. Now it's on your system like a regular launcher. And generally, if you just launch it, it'll say, do you want me to be the default launcher? You say yes, and you're done. If it doesn't, you just go in the system settings under apps, and you'll see it's kind of hidden away. But under apps, there's a menu, the three dots right here, and it gives you a chance to change the default apps. So actually, this doesn't.
The nice thing is the launcher is not a permanent fixture. So if you just hate it, just uninstall it. It's going to be a pain in the butt because you'll have to spend some time reorganizing icons.
Yeah. So configure apps, and then you can choose. You click the gear. I'm sorry. I was clicking the wrong thing. So the home app, and you see I've made mine Action 3. But any launcher that you have installed on your phone will show up there. You can choose it and change it anytime you want. Now, you're right. You do have to configure it just as you configured your launcher when you got your phone. But now's a good time. You just got a brand new phone, right? This is Action Launcher, and I'll show you why I like Action Launcher. One of the features, one of the many features that is not turned on by default is, not do that. Let me swipe in from the left. See, I'm too many things going on. That's the alphabetized app
so
tray.
Much easier.
And you just swipe it in from the left. I actually have it set up also to swipe in from the right with some widgets for applications that I use a lot. This is, I think, a really, in some ways, a better way than the app launcher toolbar, especially because you can just hit a letter and jump right to the application you're looking for. So Action Launcher is very easy to install. It also has some features that the Pixel Launcher puts in. You know, one of the things that happens with some icons on the Pixel Launcher, the official Google Launcher, is that when you swipe down on it, there's the Google Play Store. You swipe down on it, or you're going to get some menu choices. You swipe down here, you're going to get some contacts that you call all the time. You swipe down on here, you're going to get the chance to choose whether to call, video call, or voice call, that kind of thing. Well, they support that. Nova Launcher, I don't think, does, unless they've added that recently. So it's nice to have that. They also support these really great. Notice it looks like I just have single icons on here, but actually some of these are hidden folders. And if I swipe down, for instance, on what looks like the Snapseed app, actually, it's a photography folder. The default is the one you see. So if I just tap it, Snapseed will launch. But I know that underneath Snapseed are all the other less commonly used photo apps. And I've done that actually all over my front page. These are apps that I use to control the house. These are health apps under the Google Fit. So that's a really nice way of hiding things.
That's such a pretty way to display it, too.
And the other thing I do, and you'll notice you can't do this with most launchers, I turn off the text information. I know what these icons are. I don't need them taking up space. And many launchers will allow you to add more rows of icons. So you can have a richer, denser display that is more useful to you. This is Action Launcher. It's my current favorite. But Nova Launcher does a lot of the same things. I really think that these non-stock launchers are in almost every case better, even than the Google Pixel Launcher, but certainly than TouchWiz or whatever LG uses. I really like these third-party launchers. And, by the way, if you want to bring back the application tray, you can actually add an icon for the application tray. Instead of, see, I have it be Google Now right now, but I could easily make this a shortcut. This is another thing I like to do. The Pixel doesn't let you do this. Lock the desktop so I can't accidentally move these around. And there's one more thing I want to tell you about that solves one of these problems that you were talking about. You can save these setups. I save them out to Google Drive, and that means when I get a different phone or I reset my phone or for whatever reason I want to get back, I can get back to this setup just by reloading the setup. So you can have multiple setups. So you and when you first install Nova or Action, it will take the setup you have for your existing launcher. It'll import that and give you that as a starting point. So it isn't as hard as it seems to move to a new launcher. And frankly, I think it's a great thing.
And Ed, also, the AppDrawer did come back to the G6.
Oh, really?
So
they brought it back?
They did. So see if you can update it if you just...
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. See if there's an update for you. I'm not... I was doing some searching for you this morning, and I've seen different things. So back up. You got the launchers if you want to venture into that. Always a fun, like, weekend thing to do. Honestly, it's just fun to explore. But see if maybe there's an update. But I like Leo's idea just because the LG interface... Not the nicest interface.
Well, and of course, different strokes for horses for courses, because somebody in the chat room, Argon, says, I'm sorry, that is not a good-looking UI. Well, that, of course, make it the way you want it.
But that's Android. Make it the way you want it.
Yeah, like, that's what I like.
That's why I use Android.
For me, this is maybe not good-looking, but it's highly functional.
Exactly. It's functional for you and for your everyday, and that's what matters.
Did I do okay? Like, just a quick question. I mean, because I'm going to have to live with this thing for the next couple of years. Did I do okay as an LG G5?
Yeah. Grab all of the mods if you can while they still
exist.
The snap-on
backs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And get those and just take advantage of that while it's still sort of existing.
I think it's an excellent phone, don't you? I think it was a very, very good phone.
It was.
Yeah. It was the first to have two lenses, wasn't it? Do you have two lenses on that one, or is it only the G6? I think you do.
I do.
You? Yeah, I think this was one of the very first to do this. Apple then copied them, although Apple would never admit doing it.
Apple improved upon it.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Ed. Thank you very much for watching.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. Always lovely to see you.
Thanks. Come back anytime. Megan Maroney will be here next week with me on the show. If you have a question for her or me, here's how you can ask it.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
I really thought you were going to show the Nova launcher. You're using TouchWiz?
I'm sorry, Leo, I am.
Let me see. Can I just see it?
It's for science.
It's very pink. It's very pink.
Well, that's because I set it up as pink.
Oh, okay.
This is my background.
This is one of the things I have to say about Samsung. Their aesthetic seems to me particularly Korean. For instance, all the themes.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the themes, when you go into the theme store, are really kind of...
Sorry.
Strangely...
Here we go. Here's the themes.
I'm not knocking it, but just a cultural...
These are the themes that you can pick from. Yeah. At present, Samsung themes, lots of pinky.
It's nice, though, that you can do that. It's easy to change and change back.
I like to study the different interfaces, because a lot of people won't change the interface on the Samsung phones and the LG phones.
They should just be buying iPhones. One of the main things I like about Android is you can customize. But if you're like Argon and says all Android interfaces look terrible, well, I can make this look exactly like an iPhone. But if really you don't want it to look like anything at all and you don't want to customize it, then just use an iPhone. That's
until we
can
control it with our brains, but that's like 15 years away.
Not soon.
So
ladies and gentlemen, I have in my hands a very attractive laptop.
Very attractive indeed.
This is Microsoft's first laptop. Now, they did, of course, the Surface tablets, and they have the Surface Book, which they say is not a laptop because I don't know why, because it's a convertible.
It's a book.
But this is the first one from Microsoft they call a laptop, Surface laptop. Doesn't have a detachable screen. It is, for all intents and purposes, basically like an Ultrabook. I really like the colors. Depending on the configuration, you may or may not have a choice of colors. The high-end and low-end configurations just have come in silver. But if you get the middle range, the $1,200 version, you get your choice of three different colors. I chose burgundy. There's the configure. Four different colors you get. In addition to silver, three different colors. Microsoft thinks that most people are going to want to get an 8 gigabyte of RAM.
Yeah.
They're going to want 256 gigabytes of storage.
Yeah.
They're going to want an i5 processor. So this is the sweet spot where you get the most choices. That's what we've got here. basically the base unit. Oh, it's trying to do hello to log me in. That's one of the things I like about Windows is the authentication methods. This doesn't have a fingerprint reader.
No.
But it does have a camera that can see you and log you in based on face recognition. I found it to be very reliable, very quick, and I'm told fairly secure. You can't just show a picture of somebody to get it to lock in. You notice, though, immediately, in fact, you started touching it, the biggest difference in this laptop. It has a fabric top.
It's so nice.
This is a fabric, a synthetic fabric called Alcantara. It's used, I had it on the head.
That's why you were saying that. Okay.
Yeah, now you know why. I had it on the headliner of my car for a long time. There's going to be some real questions about how well this is going to wear.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Somebody at, I think, PC Magazine rubbed Cheetos into it. And I'm not doing this to mine because he couldn't get it out. He tried and tried.
What does that say about Cheetos?
Yeah, right. In fact, you probably should have Cheeto mitts if you're going to use this and not touch it. I'm sure that in time this will maybe get a little threadbare. It's a tough synthetic. It's all plastic, mm-hmm. basically. But you've got to think that this is fabric. It's going to kind of absorb grease.
It's so nice, though.
But it does. Doesn't it feel so nice? Pretty. And typing feels nice. It's a very nice keyboard. This is identical keyboard, essentially,
nice
to the Surface Pro detachable keyboard. Same with the trackpad. It's a very attractive screen. I know you already have the review of this, so I didn't really want to focus on this. Nathan told you all about it last week. What I wanted to talk a little bit about is the operating system. This is Microsoft's only laptop to offer something called Windows 10 S. It is also the most expensive 10S laptop. There will be manufacturers offering 10S-based laptops for as little as $189. And I think that really many people think that Microsoft is aiming 10S at the Chromebook crowd, people who want a simpler, notice, streamlined, this is the line on the Microsoft site, streamlined for security and superior performance.
Almost alliterated.
Yeah, almost. They came that close. It is not really streamlined. Let me tell you what Windows 10 S is. It's kind of surprised me when I started playing with it. We knew all along that the purpose of 10 S was to make a version of Windows that couldn't install applications from anywhere but the approved Microsoft App Store. Same thing as with an iPhone, where you can only install from the App Store. The idea being Microsoft would vet all the apps for quality and, more importantly, for security. And since you can only install apps from the App Store, this would be a more secure laptop. And it's true. I tried to install Google Chrome, for instance. Can't do it. Because 10S won't allow you to install something that's not in the App Store. Microsoft kind of gets around that, offering a tool for developers called Centennial that lets you wrap a traditional Windows program in such a way that you can put it in the App Store. So it really is up to Google. If they wanted to, they could wrap Chrome and Centennial and put it in the App Store. They haven't done so yet. Spotify did. They made Spotify available. But really, if you use this, you're stuck with Edge, Microsoft's browser. You don't get Internet Explorer. You don't get Chrome, and you can't install it.
Interesting.
I can live with that, maybe, but more upsetting to me, I couldn't install any of the third-party mail apps I like to use. You either have to use Microsoft Office's Outlook or use the built-in mail or use a web browser. There aren't a lot of mail apps on the App Store. Maybe that'll change over time. In fact, a lot of this strategy relies on the Microsoft App Store being a strong, rich place to get applications, and as of so far, it's not so much. One app, though, that a lot of people want that is in the App Store is Microsoft Office. They've taken the regular 32-bit Microsoft Office and wrapped it in Centennial. It is available in the App Store. In fact, you get it for a year for free if you buy the Surface laptop. You may get it a deal with some other laptops as well. That, though, brings up an interesting point. It's a 32-bit version, and I thought maybe one of the big things they might do on here to really make this more secure is eliminate Win32 entirely, the 32-bit subsystem that comes on all other versions of Windows. It's there for backwards compatibility. A lot of applications are still running on Win32. But I thought you could really make this more secure if you didn't support Win32. But Microsoft does on this. In fact, the more I investigated, the more I realized this is actually Windows 10 Pro, the full version, and they've just flipped some switches to keep you from installing apps. The switch, by the way, which you can flip on Windows 10 Pro yourself if you want to keep you from installing third-party apps. It doesn't have a command line of any kind, not just PowerShell. There's no C prompt. You can't install the Linux shell, for instance. A lot of the things that high-end users might want to do. Now, Microsoft answers people's issues by saying, well, for free through December, you can install Windows 10 Pro on here. They're offering Windows 10 Pro to Windows 10S users for a mere $50. So it isn't like you're stuck with Windows 10S. Any 10S machine could run 10 Pro. But my real issue is 10S, what is it that they said? More streamlined, speedier, and more secure. And I don't think it is. We've already seen a person on ZDNet write an article about how he was able to get ransomware on here. Now, he had to jump through some hoops. And in fact, something that probably no end user would ever do. But it was, I think, a proof of concept. He got in using Microsoft Word and the macros in Microsoft Word. And again, it's that Win32 subsystem that worries me. It's not that there is yet any exploit that can take advantage of Windows 10S without jumping through a lot of hoops. He had to use the task manager and escalate to running Word as administrator in order to do that. But I do feel like it's not going to be very long before we will see some exploits on 10S. And then the whole advantage of 10S will go away without eliminating any of the disadvantages, having to use Edge and not getting Chrome and things like that. So I think probably if you buy the Surface laptop, I would bet 99% of the people who do, who spend $1,200 on this, $1,300, will end up running Windows Pro on it. I probably will.
Yeah.
Why not upgrade? It's free. You got till December to do so. Maybe some people, schools and so forth, will buy less expensive versions running Windows 10S. But I don't think there's anything that they can do on 10S that makes it more secure that you couldn't do as an administrator using administrative tools. Here's the table of features, things you get and don't get. I think it's of dubious value. Let's be honest. I don't think it's of a lot. I think this is not going to be the Chromebook killer. And that's really what I think Microsoft wanted. Chromebooks are still, and by the way, you're using a Chromebook.
They also cost like $500,
right.
$400.
Well, they're going to be able to get these laptops down to that price. Not Microsoft, but third parties. There is, like I said, $198 version one. It's going to be kind of cheap.
And that's the point of Windows 10S, is to be this
cheap starter edition, maybe.
But it sounds
But aggressive. It's not as secure. It's not Chromebook. It's not as secure.
Yeah.
You get kind of the disadvantages of Chromebook without any of the advantages of Chromebook. So I would
Google?
Say, yeah, Google, Chrome. I would say this is an interesting idea, but is not secure enough to really justify.
But it feels nice.
But the Alcantara is very nice.
We'll
have to
see. Nice.
Call me in a year.
This is a QVC laptop. This needs
yeah. You need somebody with a beautiful manicure.
Yeah.
AKA
well,
Flo.
Almost.
Go ahead.
There we
Just,
go.
Yeah. There you go. I'll show you. By the way, I learned. Yes. Exactly.
Call now.
You know.
Call now.
I learned.
It's secure and
early on
lines.
In TV how you do these things. They, whenever, you know, Carol Merrill's showing something on Let's Make a Deal or you're watching QVC, they're always touching it, right? They're always
it's
touching
true.
It. And they just, you want to always, it's just, you
always.
Just, you're doing that. Yeah, exactly. Just kind of always be like, just kind of like, it, I don't know why, but that's, yeah, very good. Nice.
It's tangible. You
See,
can touch it.
You learned.
We're not making it up.
Yeah, look at that. Just like Carol Merrill. Very nicely done. Very nicely done. All right, so that's my thoughts. I do think it looks pretty, right? I mean, it's an attractive laptop. There's some negatives on this. For some reason, Microsoft is still, not for some reason, it's, I guess this is what they're all in on, this proprietary Surface Power cable, which it does.
Does that plug in?
Yeah. I wish they'd put Type-C on it. I think more and more laptop manufacturers, not just Apple, I just got a new Lenovo X1 Yoga that uses a Type-C. That means I can use any Type-C power adapter to charge it. That's really convenient.
And hard drive.
You've got a big laptop. You could have more connectors. Look at all this room. But they only put one USB connector and one micro mini display port connector and a headphone port. And that's all that's on there. And I find that a little bit sparse for something that's $12.99. It's just a little too expensive. So I'm happy. I spent a little bit more with my Yoga X1. That is a much better laptop. I think Dell's XPS 13 I think HP actually has a very nice Elite Book. There are a lot of better choices than this Microsoft Surface laptop. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes my thumbnail review of Windows 10S. Let's do a call for help.
Yeah.
And it's time to say hello to St. Petersburg, Florida. Paul is on the line. Hi, Paul.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm not going to take your T-shirt personally. It says, come back when I'm not here. There you go. Obviously an Android user. I spotted a Moto 360 watch.
Yep.
First gen, still going strong.
I love those 360s. I like round watches. This is the Gear Frontier S3.
Yeah, that looks really good
on
you.
It's a beautiful watch. Yeah, it's round. Round is good, right?
I like that band.
Absolutely.
Right,
Paul. Round is great.
Round is good. So what can we do for you?
I would like to know, if it's possible, to save your pictures that is on your phone directly to your computer, especially when you come home and you connect to your Wi-Fi, have it automatically save
to a shared drive. You don't trust Google Photos backing it up to the cloud. You want to have a copy here.
Exactly. I want to have a copy on my computer.
So no Dropbox?
No Dropbox.
Because it's on your computer and it, you know, it...
So, well, I understand that. You wanted a local copy. You might still use Google Photos or Amazon or Dropbox, but you wanted a local copy. That's why I bought this at great expense from Seagate. This is the Seagate Live. But don't get your hopes up. I thought this was such a great idea. Now, I should plug it in because this is a screen. It's really an Android device. That's a screen. It showed the photos. When I'm running the Live, L-Y-V-E, software on my phone, Android, iOS, it would see that I got on the network and would do exactly what you asked for, Paul. Let me plug it in. It would copy all the photos off the phone onto there. Not only that, I could put the Live application on everybody in the family's phone, and this would automatically copy all the images on here. What a great idea. Seagate discontinued it in December. They pulled the plug on it.
Oh, it doesn't...
It doesn't even work anymore. Thank you, Seagate. Yeah, you oughta... So, and by the way, this had, look at this, an HDMI port, so you could connect to the TV.
Jeez.
It had an Ethernet jack.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it was a really good idea. I even recommended it to a lot of people. They shut the service down. Now, you can, you know, it's still a hard drive. I can still use it, but it doesn't do that backup thing. And it needed the third-party service, I think, because it allowed you even to do this when you were out and about. It would automatically copy your photos. So basically, you had a storage unit at home that was copying photos as you took them. It's kind of like, this is my Google Cloud, but it's in my house. And that's the answer to your question, which is you need a network-attached storage device or NAS device, because it's not as easy to use as this was, but it's not going to go out of business like this did. Synology, QNAP, Drobo, all of them have apps that will run on the big array that you have in the house and that will automatically sync up your photos. In fact, Synology is a wonderful photos app. You can even make a slideshow. It's very much like Google Photos.
Hmm.
So that's what you need. Now, it's a lot more expensive because you're not only buying the Synology, you're buying all the drives in it. It takes a little more. You're obviously a geek, so you'll be able to figure this out. It takes a little more smarts. This you just plugged in, you put the app on there, and it did it. I think there's an opportunity. I think that somebody else should do this because this was a really good idea. Well, maybe it'll still work. I'm going to connect to the Wi-Fi. I'll find out.
I was going to suggest Tasker.
So tell me about Tasker. How would Tasker do that? That's a great program for
I
Android.
Haven't actually set it up to sort of do this for you, but I know that there's a couple of apps in the Play Store, and I know a couple that we've mentioned are all about Android that lets you do this thing that when you walk into the house and it senses your Wi-Fi network, you can set it to do different actions to your
phone. Oh, yeah. Tasker will know you've come in. Yeah. And I used it, for instance, to turn my Wi-Fi on.
Mm-hmm.
I would leave it off all day, and Tasker would turn it on. So presumably, it could turn on the Wi-Fi and then maybe even start copying photos. That makes sense.
So it definitely, I would say, a weekend project, because you kind of have to figure out the formula and what you need to do to sort of make that work. But that was my initial thought when I saw your call for help, just thinking, you know, Tasker, you can do so much with it.
What you need, though, is software running on your PC that you can somehow get connected with the Tasker to have that work. There are other NAS solutions that are kind of like if you Google Dropbox for the house or Dropbox for the home, you'll see Pogo Plug. You'll see a lot of solutions like this.
Pogo Plug.
I use NAS. I use Synology NAS, and I find that works really great. But it's not. It is the high price spread. I'm just mad at Seagate that they created what clearly was a great idea. Maybe they didn't promote it well. I didn't know about it until
nobody knew about it. Nobody knew about it. Right now.
Yeah, and look how pretty it is. I'm getting on the Wi-Fi so I can show you the interface. There, I've got all of my pictures. Up to December.
I never knew about that either.
Yeah, that you know what? If they maybe promoted it.
Come back, Seagate.
I bought it shortly before they discontinued it. I think I only got about 6 months out of it. So there it is. That's could have been. What might have been? If I were on Shark Tank, I'd invest in that. That seems like a good idea. Okay? The good news is when you get a NAS, that replaces all your cloud stuff. Like I use a NAS instead of Evernote. I use a NAS for photo storage, for music storage, for Plex so that I can watch movies, and, of course, for backup for all my systems. So once you get a NAS, you'll start finding lots of uses for it, and that's one of them. Somebody's suggesting Folder Sync. Uncle Bick's suggesting Folder Sync for Windows, I think that is.
Oh.
That has, I think, watch folders. I'm trying to think how that might work. Anyway.
I live in the cloud. I'm sorry.
I frankly don't mind having stuff in the cloud, but I like also.
I've had too many hard drives die on me. I've spilled water on too many hard drives, and I just kind of gave up and said, I'll just put it in the cloud.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yep. Sorry, Paul, that we don't have a better answer for you except spending thousands of dollars and hours of your life.
See if Tasker works. pay to unlock it. You know, play with it. See if you like it. If you really hate
Folder
it,
Sync
you know.
Runs on Android. Okay.
Oh, perfect.
So, Uncle Bick, so you have a Folder Sync on Android and you have a Folder Sync on your desktop. There you go. Maybe this is the easy way to do it. Yeah, that looks like it. So you actually can say, okay, you know.
Sync status. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm going to play with this weekend.
And a remote. All right, there you go. Folder Sync. Well, maybe we'll see that as Flo's pick on All About Android.
I'm very behind, so I need to.
There you go.
Bring some things.
There's a pro version as well. Thank you, Uncle Bick. Thank you.
That looks pretty good.
Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Good luck.
As I said, Megan Maroney joins us next week. Here's how you can get your tech questions on the show. We need your questions.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We're going to do the mailbag in just a little bit, but first, know-how. Nathan Olivares Giles and Brian Burnett figured out a hack. It kind of explains. The other day, I got a message that Nathan had followed me on Twitter. I thought, you weren't following me? For crying out loud. But you got the same message.
I did.
Turns out, well, watch. You'll see what happens.
I love Twitter. It's like one of my favorite social networks. It's especially exciting right now because it's going nuts due to the NBA draft and, of course, a lot of other stuff going on. But I'm following 796 people right now,
that's
almost 800. And pretty much once a year, I have this ritual where I get close to following 1,000 people. And it gets so noisy and so overwhelming that it's just, it becomes like not fun to use anymore. Mm-hmm. So a couple years ago, I found a little kind of JavaScript, I guess you could call it a hack on GitHub.
Okay.
And basically, it's just a little bit of JavaScript code. But just go into Chrome, go to View, then go to your developer tools and go into your JavaScript console. Mm. And it's just like a simple little bit of code right here. And then you just copy and paste that into the JavaScript console, and it will unfollow people from Twitter for you. Now, you can already see these folks that I was following just a second ago. It now shows them as me not following them anymore.
You're unfollowing people live right now?
Yeah, I'm unfollowing people live right now. Please, actually, Heather's a great journalist at CNN. She's one of my friends. I'm going to want to follow her back. I hope she doesn't take this personal. But every once in a while, as you're doing this, Twitter will recognize what you're doing, and then it'll actually stop that. So you just got to paste that little bit of code again. Wow. And then as you can see, it does it. And yeah. So you just kind of keep scrolling and you just kind of see where it stops. And then when it stops, you just paste it again. Huh. And then you just kind of go through the process. Now, for about 800 people, it might take you 15 minutes or so of doing this. It's a bit of a chore, but it can make Twitter a much more harmonious place. Now, along with that, then you got to start over, and you're starting from zero, and you're like, okay, who do I want to follow? Right. The first thing that I do is I actually just think to myself, okay, when I go to Twitter, who do I want to see, right? And then if I can't remember you just based off of my memory, then you might not have been that important in my daily life. Now, yeah. That might sound a bit harsh, and I'm sorry, but you got to keep it real here, you know? Like, that's
some
just...
people are better Twitterers than others.
Exactly.
You know?
Now, another tip that I might suggest, this is something I've done. I created a private list called Reboot, and right now it's about 43 people, and I add to it from time to time. But these are people that I know I'm going to always want to follow on Twitter. So after I totally... get rid of everybody. I start from zero. I come back in here, and then I just start following people again. You know, these are some friends and some people that I know and some people that I don't know, and folks that I just know that I'm going to want to follow again. So that's kind of a way to start from zero.
Okay, so like after you've done the nuclear option,
yeah,
and just decimated your entire followership or yeah. your following, then you have your list of survivors that you go back
you
to.
You have your list of survivors, exactly.
We were just saying how good Brian looks.
We were.
And how much I hate him. That's Brian.
I wasn't saying that.
He's so darn good looking. No, you were noting, though, the T-shirt with jacket look. It's
yes.
very attractive. Brian Burnett... of course, normally along with Father Robert Ballester is the host of Know How. You're still practicing?
We're live here on QVC. Call now.
And Nathan Oliveris Giles. And that explains why Nathan followed you and me the other day, because he had
We're
unfollowed
important.
Us with a nuclear option.
We're thing. Important.
So, it's time for the mailbag. And here it is. Don't ask why we call it the mailbag when it's obviously a mailbox. Would you like to pick one?
Okay, we'll do
important.
This one.
Is that for me to sign an autograph? Okay, well, I'll do that later.
Shall we?
Oh, now I understand why you put that in there. Okay, go ahead, you start.
All right, number one. How do I erase 30,000 emails with one stroke? Also, how do I erase Google searches? Thank you, Shelley.
Shelley probably is also currently unfollowing all the people on Twitter. I think Shelley's starting over.
She needs to purge, and I completely understand.
And a little later on, we'll show you how to take other ex-significant yes. others out of your photo collection. But, so how do you delete? Can you delete all of your emails? I think, yeah, you just open your inbox, select all. And press the delete
Yeah,
key.
We were talking about that method before the show. I mean, I guess it really depends on the email client that you use.
This is a very common thing, though.
It is.
Called email bankruptcy. Have you ever declared email bankruptcy?
Oh, when you just give up?
Yeah. So
yeah.
If you want to get... I am not of the group of people that fetishize Inbox Zero. You have Inbox
Zero?
Ain't
nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for Inbox Zero. Just fill up your inbox. Who cares?
Move on.
Who cares? But there are people out there who, and they tell you over and over what a wonderful feeling it was when they got to Inbox Zero, which means nothing unanswered, unhandled in your inbox. Well, I have 47,000 emails in my inbox, much like Shelley, our correspondent. There's no way I can get to the bottom of that. So periodically, I've never done this, but they suggest periodically you declare inbox zero, right? Mm-hmm. Which is you just send out a note to everybody you know saying, if you sent me an email and I haven't responded, I'm not going to because I'm deleting all the email. I'm declaring bankruptcy. I'm starting over. If you want me, if you need me, send me a new email. And then just delete everything. Maybe that's what Shelley's about to do.
Yeah, but it's very hard to do on the web, just FYI.
Oh, yeah. What if you're on Gmail?
Yeah. Gmail is so finicky.
Yeah, because they make you go a page at a time. It's so annoying.
I used to just load it all up in an app, maybe the Mac Mail app, and then delete it that way and just have it sync.
All right, what if you use search? And you used, such a generic search term, like at.
Or the.
Or the.
Or hello.
Use at and search for all your emails with at. And then what it'll do is show one page, but then it'll say check all, right? And you can check everything that has the at sign and then delete those. Would that work on Gmail?
I'm thinking no, just because Gmail, they show you maybe 50 messages max per page.
Well, I think, and Uncle Bick is saying this, the top checkbox, if you look at it, when you only see 30 or 50 or whatever, there's a check, you can click all, and it says, you want to select every email? And if you say yes, and then you press the delete key, and then walk slowly away while you're computer.
And then you're going to hear this wonderful music playing behind you as the whole world explodes. It's like the perfect ending to an action movie.
You know what? It turns out it's easier to delete stuff from Google.
It is.
So she's wanted a clean start at Google as well.
Uh-oh.
We suggest you go to google.com/dashboard. This is my dashboard.
This is the dashboard. Very nice. Google did this 2 years ago where it gave you this whole dashboard so you can see like what information it has on you, what info you're giving it.
All of that's very useful.
Very extremely useful.
Yeah.
This is actually, if suggestion, take a Saturday afternoon and go through this just to see what's going on with Googs.
Highly recommended.
Highly recommended.
But you can also go to My Activity, right? That's right there. Now, this is everything you've done that Google knows.
Today, Leo's used a lot of Android,
which makes me very happy. So, and then applications on Android I've used. It shows all sorts of stuff. But you see on the left there, it says delete activity by.
Boop.
If you hit that, you can delete all the activity from a certain date, like before today.
Let's see.
Don't please.
No, I'm not. I'm learning how to use a touchscreen today.
Don't, please don't. But you can choose it by product. So you can say, all the stuff, ads, Android Assistant.
Look
at all of these products. Play Store. I wonder if mail's in there. Because that's be another
one.
Nope.
It looks like mail is
really
a separate entity.
A complete fresh start. But this is really mostly stuff Google knows about you as opposed to stuff you own.
Yep.
So this is a way of kind of clearing your Google history out. So that is, I think, the easiest way to do it. Just choose say, I want to delete everything before today, and you'll be starting fresh with Google. I have to give Google kudos. A lot of people complain about Google because they say, they're spying on you. But of all the companies that know stuff about you, and I include Apple, Google's the only one where they say, this is what we know, and here's a way to control it and even delete it. I give them a lot of credit.
Probably because we were complaining for quite a bit.
Well, and truthfully, most of the things that we like about Google, like Google Now and Gmail, rely on knowing stuff about
Absolutely.
You. So if you do this, you're kind of you're starting as a baby from Google, and that's maybe not a bad thing. Maybe that's what Shelley
Sometimes
wants.
It's good to just purge and start anew.
Start anew. Hmm. Microsoft does Shelley. That too, I'm told. Microsoft will do that as well. All right. Now, email number two comes from TD. We just bought our first house, and I'm surprising my engineer boyfriend with some new home gadgets for his birthday. In addition, I was thinking the best gift he could get is an autographed photo of his favorite celebrity. Ah, and this would explain why there's a picture and a pen in here for you to sign. Also, if you have any recommendations for a travel route... Oh, it isn't a picture of you, though, is it?
This is me.
Is it you? Before you, when you got your hair cut?
Yes.
Yeah. Before you have any recommendations for a travel router, he likes to have high-speed internet in the hotel when he goes out of town for work, connect to a home service, or who knows what. Thanks for your show. It makes him so happy. Hi, TD's engineer boyfriend. Plus, he'd get a real kick if you wrote something nerdy about PCs and Androids being better than Apple. Oh, we can do that.
Not sure if I can give you this photo to sign, Leo. I don't know if I want that getting out there in the world.
PCs and Androids better than Apple. So, travel route. I used to use a great one from Netgear. There are a lot of them out there. This is different from the other thing we've talked about, which is the tiny hardware firewall. So the most secure thing you can do on an open Wi-Fi is to use a firewall and VPN. And the VPN then will encrypt all your traffic outside, to until you get to the VPN server. And then you can even use Tor with that. And so the tiny hardware firewall is great, except it slows everything down a lot. The next best thing wouldn't give you privacy. Somebody who's monitoring your Wi-Fi could still see what you're doing,
but it would protect you against inbound attacks, and that would be a little travel router, right? You still would use it just like you would use it at home. You connect it to the hotel Wi-Fi, and then you connect your computer to it. But it at least is a barrier. And if somebody's attacking you, they're not attacking your computer, they're attacking that router. So just as a router is a good thing at home, a travel router is a good idea. I don't have a particular recommendation. We should ask Jim Salter for that. But I think there are a lot of them. I used a Netgear for a long time. I was very happy with it. It's portable. It's about as big as, you know, as that. It was like a glasses case. I could put it in my briefcase. And then it was very simple. You just connect it. You don't need Ethernet. You connect it to the Wi-Fi and then connect it to your laptop. I would say Google Travel Router.
There are also Rav Power, I believe, is the brand, and they're on Amazon. Pretty affordable, kind of one of those overseas manufacturers, and they will bundle like a media server in these little plug-in routers,
yeah.
So that you know you're in the hotel and you can bring your own audio and movies with you.
Idea.
And of course, there it is. That's the one I was thinking about. And of course, you do have to contend with the hotel Wi-Fi. So that's always
the speed
thing.
Of that is the limit. But if you have local storage on your router, that's nice for watching movies and things like that. That's great. Swiss Army File Hub.
Yeah.
Huh. Okie dokie. I needed the name of the boyfriend, and I now know it's Eric. So what should I write? Like Eric? I hate Macs too. Should I write that?
Eric, Android is the superior mobile OS.
All right. Eric, I hate Apple too. I don't really. But you can lie in autographs. Did you know that? That's a federal law?
To lie in autographs?
Yeah, it's completely legal.
Somebody tell Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, Donald Trump told me that. All right, let's just put that there. And there's a little autograph. TD, and we're going to send that out. Do we have TD's address, or are we just going to throw it at the TV? Okay.
Technology's not quite there yet.
Push it out through the camera. Flo, so nice to have you.
Thank you for having me, Leo.
Always great to see you, and as your parting gift, this lovely Alcantara laptop.
Yay!
We do the...
buy today on QVC before it goes out.
You do that so well, it made me want to buy another one. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. Come by, say hi. If you want to join us in studio, please do. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. It's the best way to find out what's coming up in the week ahead. No salesman will call. Just go to twit.tv/newsletter and sign up today. You can subscribe to our show, too. That's twit.tv/NSS. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye. Alcantara. Say it with me. Alcantara.